This week on Behind the Lens.
Many of you know that I very much support many of your positions and your initiatives, and I know that that's why you are disappointed with the resolution on the agenda today, because it is not exactly what you wanted.
We take what happened in the past very seriously. We recognize that we're ultimately responsible for any breach of trust that occurred on our watch.
We no longer can suffer another no-call in this city. You broke the rules. I call it a no-call.
Council members hear a full-throated public response as Entergy New Orleans comes under intense scrutiny. We'll have more from Thursday's hearing. Also, an update on the Mosaic Plant's wastewater emergency in St. James Parish. And a newsmaker interview with the National Audubon Society on its vision for restoring the Gulf. I'm Tom Wright. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
The New Orleans City Council's Utility Committee chose not to act Thursday on a proposed $5 million fine on Entergy New Orleans. The resolution will instead be considered at the full City Council meeting next Thursday, February 21st. Our Michael Isaac Stein has details on a long, often angry public hearing.
Michael, explain, if you would, what the purpose of the meeting Thursday was initially and what actually happened Thursday.
Power plant opponents had expected to come to City Council on Thursday to the Utility Committee meeting to hear the consideration of a resolution to rescind the council's approval for Entergy's proposed $211 million power plant in New Orleans East. But earlier in the week, that resolution was pulled from the docket and replaced with a different resolution that was basically represented a settlement between the council and Entergy New Orleans. So the settlement included a $5 million fine on Entergy for its role in the paid actor astroturfing scheme, and then some other conditions, some reporting requirements for construction costs and emissions from the plant. But basically the settlement was that Entergy would be able to build the plant and they would have to pay this $5 million fine. And the reason why the original resolution to rescind approval for the plant, the reason why that was withdrawn before the meeting, I mean, a big reason for that was that Entergy apparently has already spent $96 million on the plant, although it hasn't broken ground on construction yet. And basically the utility advisors are telling the council that New Orleans ratepayers, Entergy customers, could be on the hook for a portion of that money, even if the plant is never built.
Entergy representatives were certainly there, including the president and CEO, David Ellis, and their legal counsel. There was a bit of a dispute from them about bits of the wording of the deal. Can you explain that?
Yeah, basically this was a disagreement over whether these were settlement quote-unquote actions or whether this was a sanction and you know, a penalty on Entergy. And this was more of a legal interpretation piece. It doesn't actually change the amount of money, but this, again, is just, you know, what the payment is labeled as, whether it's a sanction or, you know, as they say, an action.
We recognize that the council has worked really hard to find...
Marcus, you got to be kidding me here. You've got to be kidding me. Mr. Ellis, do you agree with what he is saying? You, as the new CEO, do you agree with these changes?
I think the matter that Marcus, Mr. Brown has raised is more a matter of, it's more issue from a legality standpoint. And so it's, from my perspective, it's more than just a principle.
Do you agree with these changes?
I think, given the fact that we have accepted, can I respond?
Yes, I respond? Mr. Ellis. But
okay. Given the fact that we have adopted,
I'm growing weary already.
Has requested that we should be given some levity here,
Mr. Ellis. You are new to this city.
I am.
You have made some very strong commitments to change the path of Entergy New Orleans.
I have.
What you are asking for right now is kind of the old ways of how Entergy would act.
Michael, it was a four-hour-plus hearing. There was no shortage of public comment.
Yeah, the room was fairly packed full of power plant opponents. You know, and the general theme throughout public comment was that, you know, people really didn't feel like they got, you know, their fair say in the original application process. So, again, this is sustaining the demands for a new rehearing process, a new, you know, a revote on this power plant. You know, there were a lot of people there from New Orleans East, a lot of people from the Vietnamese community, a lot of public comment that needed to be translated into English for the council members. Yeah, pretty strong showing from power plant opponents yesterday. Logan Burke, executive director for Alliance Affordable Energy, which is currently suing the council over their decision to approve the power plant.
Last year, as council members took a vote in favor of this plant, one of the reasons given for approval was, well, there may have been other solutions, but alternatives were not considered, so we're stuck with this. That was there was only one reason for that position. The utility that serves these people of the city of New Orleans was not held responsible for directives given by its regulator. Entergy was given a pass despite failing to complete its homework. And so this Tuesday, our coalition provided support from national experts on just one of many potential alternatives, which would have more cost-effectively provided resilient power to the people of New Orleans. And yet here we are again, after months of scandal and scolding, with a draft resolution directing Entergy to do their homework that's been pulled from the agenda and rendered moot. Our question is, what will it take? What credibility crisis is enough? What threat or scandal or response from the citizens is serious enough to warrant
20 seconds.
An elected regulatory body say no to this corporation's wishes? This loan resolution represents Entergy's offer and a list this council has the right to ask for anyway, and requirements that the utility simply do the job for which it is paid handsomely.
Mà quyết định trước khi hỏi ý kiến, vậy quý vị có thấy là công bằng hay không? So it's not fair, and it's not right, and all we ask, and you guys are the regulators of Entergy. What does that mean? You are the parent. You do not reward bad decision, bad behavior with a brand new car. You do not give a bad college student, your own son who flunks out of college, and give him a brand new car and give him power to the sewage and water board, give the whole shalom when they did bad behavior. All we want is a fair process. Hear our voice. Go through with this with us. If you're living in New Orleans East, who would want a gas plant in their backyard, in their right mind? Who want that?
That second excerpt was from Mark Nguyen, a power plant opponent. And Michael, there was also a very heated exchange between one of the opponents and Councilman Jay Banks. Explain that.
Yeah, so it was between Councilmember Jay Banks and Monique Hardin. Monique Hardin is an attorney with the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice. She is currently representing the Alliance for Affordable Energy in their lawsuit against the council. But she came up, echoing a lot of the same critiques that a lot of power plant opponents were, but she kind of added something extra, which is that Jay Banks for years had worked for Legends Consulting. And Legends Consulting is one of the advisors that one of the consultants that the council pays to advise them on utility regulation.
Mr. Banks, you were involved in that because you were an advisor. You were paid with Legend Consulting. You've never revealed
Hardin,
that.
Thank you.
That's a problem.
Myron, I have never hidden anything.
I've got the documents right here. I've got the documents. statements right here from Legend Consulting, their statement of qualifications, electric and natural gas regulatory services to this city council, and they list you as a staff member of their New Orleans operations.
Thank and that is 100% correct. And also...
Well, then you said it's not true.
No, I did not say that. I said I've never hidden anything.
You've never told it. You never disclosed
ma'am,
it.
Ma'am, I've never met you to tell you anything. I don't know you from
public,
a can of paint.
To the public, okay? You've never disclosed
well, let me be very clear.
This is
not only
you were part of negotiating this.
Let me be very clear. Not only did I work with Legend Consulting, I also worked with Entergy. That's because I'm good at what I do. Just like Shaquille O'Neal played for two teams, I played on both sides. I have been affiliated with Entergy and with the advisors, and I've never hid that from anybody. I'm very proud of my record.
Sir, you have never
ma'am, I don't know. I've never had a conversation with you.
So it doesn't appear that Councilmember Banks ever included this work on his financial disclosure statements to the Louisiana Board of Ethics. And actually, after we published our story, he sent out a press release saying that he worked there. He worked for the consultants until June 30th, 2017, right before he qualified to run for city council. He also said in that statement that he actually worked for Entergy as well from 2005 to 2008. He said that he has never tried to hide this fact, and he doesn't feel that he ever needed to, felt that that experience made him, you know, qualified to weigh in on utility matters, not, you know, he wasn't conflicted as much as he was informed. So that was kind of his response to Monique's accusation.
So, Michael, we should expect perhaps another fiery hearing next week when the full city council takes this up?
Yeah, so they actually didn't even take a vote on this resolution. Normally what would happen is that the committee would vote on whether to recommend the resolution to the full city council. They didn't do that. Instead, they kind of just pushed this into next week, and yeah, it's going to be considered for the full city council next week. So yeah, as you said, we should expect another long animated hearing next Thursday.
More details from Michael Isaacstein's reporting on the lens, NOLA.org. Michael, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Representatives of Mosaic Fertilizer say they're confident they can keep acidic wastewater from their plant near Convent on company property in case of a breach of their gypsum-walled reservoir there. But the company acknowledges that a worst-case scenario could put some of that water into nearby waterways and wetlands. That's according to documents released late Thursday by the state's Department of Environmental Quality. LDEQ says Mosaic needs to provide a more detailed and complete contingency plan for a potential breach event. Company officials told the Lens this week they've been working around the clock to move millions of gallons of wastewater away from a 200-foot-tall gypsum stack and to prevent that water from flowing offsite in case of a breach.
So we've done a lot of modeling to determine, okay, what's worst case scenario, and then how can we prepare? Because our number one goal is to make sure that we don't have any offsite impact. And to date, we've had no offsite impact.
That's Ron Yusurik. He's the general manager at Mosaic's Uncle Sam plant in St. James Parish. We'll continue to follow this story at the lens, NOLA.org. A new report by the National Audubon Society highlights projects and programs that it says are critical to help the Gulf Coast and its wildlife recover from hurricanes, oil spills, and other disasters. Here in Louisiana, That plan leans on four coastal restoration projects, including the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. We spoke with Kara Lankford, Audubon's director of Gulf Coast Restoration.
Ms. Lankford, first thing I noticed about the report is the title, Audubon's Vision, Restoring the Gulf of Mexico for Birds and People, end quote. Now, that I understand Audubon's mission of conservation and in particular with birds, but there's suggested a certain prioritization. So I would ask you to begin with Audubon's priorities in this sweeping vision statement for Gulf restoration.
Sure. Birds are a strong indicator of overall health of the Gulf ecosystem, of any ecosystem. And if we address the needs of birds throughout the Gulf of Mexico, consequently, we also benefit the people that are part of that larger ecosystem by providing restored beaches for storm protection, clean drinking water, a healthy environment to boost tourism and recreational opportunities for humans. We've all seen during hurricanes the impact that those barrier islands have on reducing that overall storm surge. As that water comes ashore, barrier islands act to protect those human communities. Consequently, birds utilize those barrier islands for nesting, for overwintering grounds. So, as I said, if we're looking at restoring birds, there is that additive benefit of restoring that environment for people, for those of us that also utilize that environment.
What are your priorities in coastal Louisiana in particular?
So coastal Louisiana, within the plan, we have recommended four projects. The first one being the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. We're also proposing Chandelier Island restoration. There's also Queen Bess Island restoration, and then freshwater bayou marsh creation. So most of those projects are probably pretty familiar to folks on the Louisiana coast, especially the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. Obviously, when we talk about, you know, benefits to people and the ecosystem, Mid-Barataria is a great example of a project like that that's, you know, going to serve to build land and, you know, incredible marsh habitat for birds and other wildlife. It's definitely a dire situation in Louisiana. We're seeing marsh loss at a severe rate right now. So putting in a diversion like this is really going to alleviate some of that stress.
Mid-Barataria and the other river diversions are controversial, of course, in part because the fishing industry feels so strongly that reconnecting the river to the coastal basins in this manner will drastically alter the fishing habitats that they depend on to earn a living. And so I would ask for your response to those who would suggest that Audubon is putting birds before fish and ultimately people with this sort of prioritization.
Sure. I think, you know, here at Audubon, we see the whole ecosystem. And we think that holistic restoration is needed. When you think about Mid-Barataria, this is a transformative project. And, you know, it really is a cutting-edge project. And given that, monitoring and adaptive management is going to be key moving forward. You know, making sure that we monitor the impacts of these sediment diversions on, you know, other wildlife, of course. You know, you mentioned fish and oysters. So that's certainly something that, you know, as the sediment diversion is stood up, we can monitor those impacts and, you know, change course with the water flow accordingly to, you know, try to ensure that impacts are kept to a minimum.
How do expected sea level rises and other extreme climate change factors play into your planning here?
Yeah, you know, that's a really great question. You know, here at Audubon, we certainly recognize that changing sea levels are going to impact the Gulf ecosystem. And, you know, just shoring up these habitats and, you know, specifically for birds from our lens, ensuring that we can buy them some time. We know that seas are rising at an alarming rate. So even if we can, you know, put a little bit of a Band-Aid by restoring some of these barrier islands, as we begin to learn more about how these marshes, how these coastal areas are going to migrate inland due to sea level rise and those impacts. So absolutely. And I think that's something that, you know, as scientists around the world, not just in the Gulf of Mexico, we're still learning how sea level rise is going to impact these environments and to what level. But as we do that, you know, restoring and shoring up areas where we're already seeing impacts from coastal erosion, from sea level rise, there's things we can do in the meantime as we learn more about the impacts and effects on wildlife and habitats.
Okay.
And the plan, quoting from a report, recommends an investment of more than $1.7 billion in restoration and conservation efforts across the Gulf Coast. But to be clear, this is not Audubon funding we're talking about. This is essentially public funding and in bulk, a lot of the settlement money from the BP Deepwater Horizon settlement.
That's correct. Yeah. So there's about $16 billion available through that BP settlement for ecosystem restoration. And, you know, that's a fairly large dollar amount. $16 billion is a large amount of money. But when you look at the stressors, of course, facing this large marine ecosystem that is the Gulf of Mexico, it's not quite enough, I don't think. So I think it's something for us to consider, you know, making sound investments now, but also beating the drum that, you know, this is a large marine ecosystem. It's a big expansive area that has many stressors at play, not just from the oil spill, but hurricanes. We talked about coastal land loss, sea level rise. We can make some really good sound investments now with this money, but knowing that this is a long game. This is a marathon and not a sprint. And yes, this $1.7 billion in sound investments that Audubon is recommending, this is really our kind of five-year vision. This is a short-term vision for Audubon, and we'll constantly be reassessing these recommendations. While we are targeting oil spill recovery dollars, we will be opportunistic. And, you know, there's a couple of other funding sources that we'll be targeting as well. But, you know, given that there is this incredible opportunity right now in the Gulf of Mexico with oil spill recovery dollars, it's, you know, we're seizing the moment, of course, and looking to what's best for birds and, of course, people for Gulf recovery.
Finally, just to read a bit from Audubon's website, Audubon's mission is to conserve and restore natural ecosystems, focusing on birds, other wildlife, and their habitats for the benefit of humanity and the Earth's biological diversity. If I could put you on the spot here, could you explain why should Louisiana residents care about biological diversity?
We are part of this ecosystem. You know, we as humans utilize the natural resources that are available to us on this planet for food, for drinking water, for clean air. And when those resources are healthy and thriving, then we are healthy and thriving as well. So I think separating humans is, you know, part of that ecosystem is an incorrect way to view the world. And as I said earlier, birds and other wildlife are a really good monitor of that ecosystem health. And if there's something wrong with bird populations, for example, in many cases, there's also a stress on the human environment. So restoring those natural resources is an absolute benefit to the human population as well.
Carol Langford is Director of Gulf Coast Restoration for the National Audubon Society. Ms. Langford, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Join us next week for more news from New Orleans Nonprofit Investigative Unit. And remember, your generous support makes this reporting possible. We ask you to give a donation today at support.thelensnola.org. I'm Tom Wright. Thank you for getting behind the lens.